Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are not recommendations, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
Hello and welcome. I'm David Thornton, Senior Journalist at Money Magazine, bringing you today's episode of Friends with Money. Space, the great final frontier, is the new playing ground of billionaires looking to kickstart a new tourism destination. But the investment opportunities go far beyond this, from defence through to Australia's bread and butter, mining. KPMG just released a paper last year titled Investment in the Space Sector. Joining me to discuss the paper's findings and more is Mike Carnes, lead partner for defence and space industry at KPMG Australia, and his colleague Jacob Hacker, space industry account lead. All right, so Mike, Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos have just launched themselves into space. Can we expect to see the same from Gina Rinehart and Andrew Forrest, or is our own space industry not quite there yet?
Well, I think we'll find a range of high wealth Australians are very interested in this idea. I think your question is, will we see them launch from the Cape Peninsula or in South Australia, and in that, on that basis, I'm confident that's going to happen. I really am, David. I think space tourism is a real thing. It's not a gimmick in North America, although it might appear that way now. For Australian space tourists who want to do that in the short term, sure, you'll have to get in the queue with the other billionaires. But in time, as our 30 Voices in Space explains, space tourism is a real thing. It will in some ways lead, but in many ways follow our nation's journey into space. And it'll be a really important part of maybe not yours and mine, but our children will have every opportunity to go and visit space in a far more accessible price point than the current crop of billionaires. So I'm excited about it, Dave.
Certainly exciting. Talking about the current day, what contribution is Australia making to the space industry?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think Australia's space journey is slightly odd in the sense that it was only a few decades ago that we were one of the preeminent nations in space. People might recall Woomera and the important role that Australia played in America's space journey. Those assets are still available in Australia. In fact, whilst they're largely used for defence purposes, they're back on the menu for civil space and, of course, defence space. We went from a period of being a relative titan, if you like, in the space sector to dropping out of the race entirely until a couple of years ago with the emergence of the Australian Space Agency. And that, I think, has really been a lightning rod to Australian industry to get back into the sector. We think now it's about a $5.16 billion sector in Australia. That's risen markedly from, I think, the $1.5 billion worth of economic activity and revenues we were seeing back at the beginning of the decade, and that trajectory's gone up. So I think it's an important part of our, a small part of our sector economy now, but a growing one, and it's got incredible trajectory and some really wonderful stories in it.
Does investment in space offer a good return on investment? Obviously, Australia's government coffers are deep in the red due to COVID. Is this where private investment could come into play?
Yeah, I think it will. So again, KPMG has done a number of papers around investment in space, and I might throw to Jacob in a second to talk about some of the detail there. But within essence, we're seeing globally and in Australia this kind of switch between a space sector which was very much government driven through their space agencies. But Australia, with its relatively new space agency, is unique in the sense that it's very civil focused initially. And whilst still a lot of the money is coming through defence and other government agencies, we're seeing most of the support being provided to scale-ups, startups in space, and to launch satellite operations, agriculture and mining activities. So I think what we're seeing is a federal government seeded commercial story in Australia against, and that's the exciting bit, but the backdrop is still the billions of dollars in defence. Those two things will come together and will reinforce each other. Jacob, do you have the same view, or have you got a different view on the investment story?
Yeah, I do, Mike. And I think it's really positive in terms of the returns that are available. Particularly the venture capital market in the United States shows some really positive investment in what we call new space companies, so ones that are sort of startups and scaling. And I think even this year, the real trend is around those companies moving into publicly traded companies. And I think historically, you don't really see retail investors engaging in the space sector except for the listing of Virgin Galactic and Rocket Lab and others is a really interesting move there. And they're through SPACs or special purpose acquisition companies. And I think there are 14 of those that have been announced this year. So a really positive momentum there. I think if I sort of drill back down into the Australian market, something that is really positive that we've seen is the move beyond just venture companies like Main Sequence or Blackbird into some of the industry super funds. And we've seen a couple of those engage in the funding rounds that both Kilmore and Mirios have run as well. So a good trend there.
So what we've basically seen is NASA outsourcing functions it traditionally did to the private sector, to companies like Boeing, SpaceX and the like. Is this a model we're going to see moving forward?
I think it's the beginning of that model. The crux of the problem, I guess, for a NASA had too little public capital to achieve the outcomes they were seeking around the moon and Mars, et cetera. And what we've seen is through the companies Jacob spoke about, they've been able to achieve the outcomes that NASA sought, but with less money and in less time. That can only be a good thing. So I feel like we're seeing that model that we all suspected was true is being proven out in the US example. I think we'll see more of that in Europe, and it, rather than being a change for Australia, will be the default. And we'll see the use of public and private capital to accelerate a civil space sector in Australia, which is really exciting. Jacob?
Yeah, so I think there are functions and capabilities in the sector that lend really well to a commercial or a productized sort of model. And some of the data and connectivity we're seeing, consumer broadband and some of the Earth observation data is a perfect use case of that. I think where both defence and civil government will continue to play a really important role is around some of the military capabilities, but also some of the initial exploration activities. So activities on Mars and Venus at the moment aren't necessarily commercial, but need a strong government foundation.
Jacob, you mentioned the military applications. It seems like space is becoming an arena of proxy competition between the US and China, much like it was during the Cold War. Will this act as a tailwind for investment in space? And do you see Australia getting pulled into those geopolitics as our defence industry seems to have done?
I think the heritage of the space sector is in defence capability, and a lot of the early astronauts we saw were Air Force and Navy personnel, and a lot of the early inventions with the GPS system, for example, was for military application, and now has a lot of dual use civil benefits. So I think that's going to be a key area where Australia plays. We've announced that we're setting up an Australian Space Command, which feeds into sort of the Five Eyes US run combined space command or space operations center. And I think a lot of the spending and budget that we've got in the space sector in Australia is going to come out of defense. So it's circa $13 billion in the coming decade. And I think that'll drive a lot of the capability we develop locally. And I guess the point to that is that there are lots of civil and other capabilities that come out of that as well.
Are we actually launching up our own satellites, or are we playing a communication type role as we did with the Parkes Observatory, which was famously immortalized in the movie The Dish?
We have launched satellites before, and I think we're the third country to put a satellite in orbit, third or fourth. But there are plans for us to return to a nation that can have an orbital launch capability. There are three sites that are sort of planned, and some of those are now licensed to launch from. And we've got some good capability in manufacturing spacecraft in Australia as well that's developing. So I think that's definitely something we'll see in the coming years.
So you hinted at it just then. What are some of the competitive advantages that Australia could exploit when it comes to space investment?
Australia's got a really important ground station network, and that we downlink a whole lot of space data in Australia for telco use and military use as well, and as well as link into a lot of the deep space missions that NASA and ESA do. But I think our advantages are much broader than that. We're well allied with the UK and the US and others, so that's quite favourable for some of our space activity. But I think broader than that is Australia's got world-leading capability in a lot of its research. And if you look at optical comms and lasers and autonomous systems and robotics, Australia is the focus point of a lot of other nations there to develop that capability here.
Is brain drain a threat there? Are we going to lose our best and brightest to the States or Europe?
Well, traditionally we do, David. That's absolutely true. And if you look across the ranks of ESA and NASA and some of these businesses we've spoken about in the Northern Hemisphere, they are populated with a number of Australians. Enrico, the head of the Australian Space Agency, was one of those, and he returned to Australia to head that agency. I think there's every reason to believe that brain drain that's historically been the case is going to reverse or at least stabilise. Given you know, the COVID world we live in, there's lots of things about Australia, not just our environment, but also the trajectory of our space economy, which will attract people back. And I know that KPMG's had no trouble in securing some pretty impressive space CVs to return to Australia and to join our business to get involved in it. So I'm again, positive about the Australian space story.
Jacob, you've been involved in some research the past couple of years. In regards to our space industry, what did your research uncover?
I think some really interesting messaging, and we've been involved in a few interesting pieces. One was looking at the investment environment in Australia and I guess some of the challenges and opportunities that Australia has, but also more broadly at what the future direction of the space sector is and some of the work the G20 are doing around space. So I think some of the highlights there are that there's lots of there's really a flourishing ecosystem of companies in Australia, and there are lots of brands which are becoming well known internationally there. A lot of this research comes out of Australia's universities, and I think one of the challenges for us is really getting a model to rapidly commercialize that and scale it into not just startup companies that are 3 or 5 or 10 people, but medium enterprises that can contract with government. That'll open up an export opportunity for us. There's lots of space sector opportunity in the Asia Pacific and broader as well. So lots of different things, but that's one I think is particularly relevant.
You mentioned the university research. Where in the supply chain do you see Australia contributing? Is it sort of upstream in that with that research piece, or is it downstream in manufacturing?
I see the different universities having different brands here, and if you look at sort of UNSW, they're doing work in space mining. Sydney University's highly skilled in robotics, and then we've got up at UQ a lot of hypersonic capability. So I think it's a real mix. It's everything from the manufacturing of spacecraft through to the intelligence, the artificial intelligence on the data which comes back from space.
You mentioned space mining. Australia is obviously a world leader in mining on terra firma. Are we going to see the same narrative play out in space?
I definitely think so. There's a big program the Space Agency have launched that's focused on Australia being part of the Artemis program, which NASA's running, and and the return of people to the moon. And I think a really critical part of that is being able to use the resources on the moon to sustain people there. And part of that includes the ice, which is on the moon very nicely separates into hydrogen and oxygen, which is rocket fuel. So I think Australian technology can be at the forefront of that.
I do agree that Artemis and our return to the South Pole of the Moon is very exciting. And to your point, David, mining in the Pilbara using the robotic and distance logistics systems that we use there, I mean, it doesn't feel that dissimilar to doing it on another planet. It's only a few more thousand, hundreds of thousands of kilometres away. But you did make the point earlier about some of the conflicting motivations and communities in space. We, in our 30 Voices, we talked about space, the future of space being communal, commercial and contested, which I think is drawing out the same point, that it's not simple to describe the business environment, how that will interact with whatever happens in the defence or military space environment, and how all that interacts with the safety environment, which you'd expect to be predominant across all of them. And I think that's the thing that all of us will struggle most to unpick. How will all those forces actually interact when we're talking about a permanent human presence on the South Pole of the Moon, when we're talking about, you know, possibly 100,000 man-made items orbiting the Earth up from the 35,000 that are there today? There's lots of room for error. There's lots of room for contest and conflict. But having said all that, I feel like there's every reason to be optimistic about the way Australia and particularly business in Australia can be part of that future.
Is space junk the problem it's made out to be?
So something like 5% of the objects that Mike mentioned in space, we have some control over. To date, not many of the satellites we've launched into low Earth orbit have a plan to deorbit or the capability to avoid other objects. And if we're talking about going from launching 1,000 satellites in the last year, which is already a third of the satellites in orbit, up to sort of 50 or 100,000, which are planned for the next decade, then we need to get really good at space traffic management and being able to avoid collisions to keep using the domain.
Well, Mike and Jacob, this has been a great chat, really fascinating. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, David. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having us, David.
Well, that was Mike Carms and Jacob Hacker from KPMG. It certainly seems that the opportunities for investment in space are as boundless as it is. You can subscribe to Friends with Money wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to check out our online content.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider your personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any of the content without further independent financial research and advice.